My name is Merton Strauman, and I've been asked to record some of my recollections regarding the beginnings of Holden Village. It is with that in mind that I'd like to give the following account. I was serving as youth director of the Lutheran Free Church. The youth organization that I headed up was entitled the Luther League Federation. We held annual conventions, and in 1960, our convention was held on the campus of St. Olaf College in Northfield. One of the features of our convention was in the personality of Gil Berg. He was identified as mayor, and a colorful figure he was. In this role, which was unique to the convention, he was a kind of convention manager, the one who gave announcements, who watched proceedings, and in general served as a master of ceremonies. It was at this convention that I was introduced for the first time to the word Holden Village. Gil Berg came to me and said, "Mert, one of the biggest things of my life has come into my hands, and I don't know what to do with it. It's far too big for me, and I'd like to tell you about it." So we walked outside, and I can recall he took out a package, and in this package were a number of photos that he then spread out on the wall by which we were standing. And then he began to tell a story of how a mining village had been given by the Howe Sound Company to Lutheran Bible Institute, and the people there had referred it to the American Lutheran Church. Gil explained to me that he was asked to be the chairman of a feasibility committee to look into the pros and cons of accepting such an enormous piece of property and trying to maintain it in some way. He spoke with such enthusiasm and almost awe of the potential of the place that I immediately responded. I said to Gil, "Look, I'm going to be on the West Coast for conducting a youth training program. So why don't we arrange while I'm there to make a trip out to the mining village, and then I may have a chance to see what its potential is." That's what happened. After the convention, I was in Seattle and had conducted some sessions at Lutheran Bible Institute. Gil Berg and I got into his car and drove up into the Cascades, over to Lake Chelan, and then to the village. He showed me the place, and of course it was awesome. Here were large, well-constructed chalets, empty, waiting occupancy. Here was a schoolhouse. Here was a gymnasium. There was a large dining room. We walked over to the miners' village, and here I saw in some of those homes clothes hanging, dishes still on the table, and evidences that these people must have left in a great hurry. Gil told me that the place had been left with quite an abundance of wool blankets, dishes, such things as equipment that were a part of the village, and had been left when everybody had moved out to other places. Unfortunately, there were some who found out about the village and knew that there were things there that could be taken, and came with horses and loaded up bundles of stuff and took away. The fear at that time was that if this place stood idle too long, it would go into disrepair and would no longer be worth anything. The immediate thought that came to me was that this place could become an excellent setting for a national gathering place of young adults. We as youth directors have been concerned over the fact that our focus had been primarily on the high school youth, and that little was done to gather young adults in a type of inspiring convention and to motivate them in ways that would develop a resource for the life of the church. So, with this in mind, I returned back to Minneapolis and was shortly at a Lake Geneva camp in Wisconsin. It was a beautiful setting that we had chosen as a site for the annual retreat of youth directors and their wives. We, as youth directors of the various denominations, had found it a real stimulation to come together for fellowship and sharing. And this was a locus for this time. It was a place of special interest for me because it was a time when I could report some of the final outcomes of our statistical analysis of data. I can recall that we had a very special report to present on the large youth study that we had carried out. And we had pursued some of the data through very sophisticated kinds of analyses and now could report on that. If I remember correctly, we had particular data dealing with the area of religious beliefs. At any rate, it was at this retreat of youth directors that I showed the pictures and shared the information of my visit to Holden Village. The response was one of high enthusiasm. And I would say that probably the most enthusiastic was Bergie, Wilton Bergstrand, who was youth director of the Augustana Synod. He immediately took a very pragmatic stance towards this place and talked about what would be needed to gather young adults, college students, who could converge in the place, clean it up, and restore it to the kind of situation that would be needed for hosting national conferences. The idea of a young adult retreat was a captivating one, but the group did know that young adults are very hard to organize and very hard to corral for any kind of gathering such as this. But we did establish, I know, 2 weeks and maybe three for gatherings of young adults. And young adults did gather. I could recall some of the early years at Holden Village. I was there with my family. In fact, we were there every summer until 1969. And young adults formed the population for at least two of the summer weeks that I was there, and I can recall how some of them responded to the setting of Holden Village. It seemed as though a lot of their supports fell apart. And here in the setting of God's creation, they began to see and face themselves in a new and almost threatening way. It was difficult for some, to the point of where there got to be an awful lot of counseling. I can recall that the days that I would be spending there, and they were my vacation days, became very exhausting ones. I not only was involved in the fun of the place, the trout fries in the evening, and the Beanie Lundholm sings, and the chapel services that we would have, and the Bible studies and the like, but there are also the in-between hours that were spent in counseling. And as a result of that kind of intense life, I can recall the last time being at Holden Village that our family could not make the entire trip back to Minneapolis from Holden Village. It was necessary the first day to stop early at a motel and just plain rest to get strength for returning home. Say that simply to illustrate the intensity of the weeks that did follow when we sought to carry out a ministry and had both exciting people present on campus and many with very deep-seated problems. I should mention that the board that was established once the idea of incorporating this village consisted of representatives from the various denominations, the Lutheran bodies. I was there as a representative of the Lutheran Free Church, and I can recall that from the very beginning, Laverne Rickey accepted the role of chairman and did an excellent job in the patient kind of leadership that was needed to begin to formulate policy and select staff and begin to chart a course and a purpose. Some of those early meetings were rather informal, not too businesslike, and I'm sure were wanting in some of the things we associate with truly a board meeting. Nevertheless, the board meetings did result in the psychological ownership of the place by the various Lutheran bodies, and a good beginning was made, and the enthusiasm of the place began to become evident. Some of the excitement of the place was enhanced by visits by especially talented people who contributed something that became part of the tradition of the place. Dick Wilson, for instance, the remarkable and creative person from Minneapolis, was there, and shortly had created the Holden song that we used to love to sing. Beanie Lundholm, as pianist, was able to capture the audience, and we sat around those tables and sang after dinner in a very remarkable way. And the leading of the singing was entirely his dancing fingers on the keyboard of the piano. Berge, I can recall, was really a lifesaver for that Holden Village. He came with his students and spent the summers cleaning up the place, getting it started. He brought in some of the songs that became a part of the tradition. I can recall the song, When I Survey, Mighty God. Oh, these were powerful songs. Other people can tell many of the details of the Holden Village as it began to emerge as more of a family-centered group. We had some high school young people coming in who were simply not able to adapt well to the rather unstructured and more free-flowing schedule of the day. And so for that reason, and because it was difficult to know when a delegation of young adults would fill up a week or not, the movement began towards family-centered and a general age span type population. I think this represents about all that comes to my mind by way of the beginnings of Holden Village. It was a very important place for my family and myself. Each summer, we headed for Holden Village and spent approximately 4 weeks there. Here at the village, we would participate on the program, assisting in whatever ways seemed important, and thus participating as members of the faculty. Here, let me be more specific, because I'm now consulting our family diary. In 1961, in September, I flew to Holden Village in the Cascades for a board meeting, and I suspect that this would be the first official board meeting of Holden Village. Following the board meeting, several of us, and that included Wilt Bergstrand and Cal Storley, went on a horse hike with Gil Berg. And this went through a range of mountains and was a 3-day event. I can remember how sore we were when getting off our horses following the end of the trip. And I remember the quip of Bergstrand, who said, "After riding for 25 miles on a horse, one is much better off." End of quote. In August of 1962, our entire family were at Holden Village as participants in the program, and I served as a member of the faculty. One of the memorable events there was a hike to Holden Lake. This was a 2.5-day hike up to Cloudy Pass in the cold and the rain. What is memorable is that our group, namely 22 hikers plus members of my family, found that it was impossible to think of camping out because of the rain and snow. We found a cabin, and we bedded down 22 people in that cabin by carrying out tables and furniture and leaving only floor space. There were some who even slept on a platform made in kind of an attic. What we especially remember, of course, is that it became, once the lights were out, the time for the Saturday evening dance of the mice. And they were many, and they frolicked all over the place over our beds, over our hair, and the like. But nevertheless, we survived.